And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Voices from the Grid. I am the White Ranger Michael, being joined by Red Ranger Sasha,
the one and only in the fabulous
Blue Ranger Brian.
Adley ho, neighborino, how's it going?
Who is apparently now Ned Flanders. And I haven't done this part in a while. I kind of miss doing this. We need our little Reservoir Dogs style intro, but Mr. Black Ranger, Ben Taylor.
It's me, your boy, Ben Taylor, a.k.a. The shortstop for the Hartford Yard Goats.
It's the real baseball team.
It is.
The Hartford Yard, what? The Goats?
Yard Goats.
Yard Goats.
Yeah, it's a minor league baseball team.
They sound about as worth as much as a Harvard education.
I'm going to assume that they were like a team in 1873 and disbanded after like three seasons.
No, they're a current team right now.
Ben is their shortstop. He just told you.
Yep.
Yeah. last season, they actually did a Hartford Whalers inspired uniform. So that's actually how I learned about them. But anyways, we're not here talking about baseball or any of that other stuff. We're here talking about Power Rangers here on Voices from the Grid. And we're doing the power transfer, where we lose three, we gain three. And Zed just still has issues. But anyways, so with that, we're going to hop right on into it with everyone's favorite segment, In My Mind, the quick run through of the power transfer, a.k.a.
Before you begin, do you have your water ready to drink afterwards? Because during the power transfer, you needed a minute when you were done. No, during the injury encounter, you needed a minute when
you were done. Yeah, I got my water right here.
All right.
I'm good. But anyways, the power transfer, a.k.a.
the changing of the guard.
A more calmer one compared to others. But anyways.
Yeah.
But anyways, we begin as we see a bunch of journalists at telephone booths. Remember those telephone booths? As they've learned the names of the three Angel Grove students named to the peace conference. And then which we see at the youth center on the news, the peace conference is fully explained. And then Jason, Zach, and Trini are named to the excitement of the others in Bulk and Skull's dismay. I know, mind-blowing people, mind-blowing. Kim, Tommy, and Billy go to see Jason, Zach, and Trini in a really odd shot. Zed is pleased, and he has a Zord. All right. Zordon congratulates Jason, Zach, and Trini. The command center is alerted of Zed's plans. Zordon introduces Tor, who was introduced like the episode before, but sure, we're just going to make believe that we've never introduced the Tor ever before. While stating Zed is preparing Serpentera. Zordon notes that three new Rangers will be part of the power transfer, and the Rangers need to go to the deserted planet to retrieve the Sword of Light, marking Jason, Zach, and Trini's last mission. Goldar alerts Zed of the Rangers' departure. Zed sends Squat and Babu to Angel Grove to release a device to put everyone to sleep, which brings us a Finster reference, because Finster's awesome. Zed and Goldar depart to chase the Rangers. The Rangers then arrive to the deserted planet and locate the obvious deserted city. I mean, it's just kind of right there. Didn't need a GPS unit or anything. And here comes Serpentera. Back at school, we see Adam, Aisha, and Rocky, who've transferred to Angel Grove High School officially. Bulk hits on Aisha. Gas knocks out the students. Zordon transfers Adam, Aisha, and Rocky to the command center. They are briefed and are sent to destroy the device. Meanwhile, we see Jason take on Zed, and Serpentera is huge. Zed sends putties to attack Rocky, Adam, and Aisha, and they get chained to a tree. Serpentera doing some damage, Tor to the rescue, and Serpentera lets Tor go? Sure. The others find the statue with the sword, Serpentera doing destruction, and what is going on, because that shot was just so weird. Which then brings us into part two, where we begin at the park where Adam, Aisha, and Rocky need to figure out how to escape. Adam comes up with an idea and gets the keys. The three take on the putties to better success, and they use the soccer ball to destroy the device. Back on the deserted planet, the Rangers are still struggling with the sword, but Billy figures out how to get it. But Zed destroys the city, but the Rangers escape. Rangers coming in one by one to the command center. Zordon introduces Adam, Aisha, and Rocky as the new Rangers. Tommy holds up the Sword of Light. Powers are now transferred from Jason, Zach, and Trini to Rocky, Adam, and Aisha. Adam is now your new Black Ranger. Rocky is your new Red Ranger. And Aisha is now your new Yellow Ranger. Ben is making fun of my little gaffe there.
No, Ben and I are having a private conversation.
Well, anyway, wasn't supposed to be illuminated to the audience. Well done, Mike.
Yeah, no problem. Anyway, Zed sends the new monster to suck the life out of the citizens. Rangers in a tough battle as putties now enter the fray. Zed is displeased the Rangers are still at full strength, and Zed makes his monster grow. Don't forget about Tor, LOL. Rocky takes on the monster while the others deal with Serpentera. After calling upon the White Tiger Zord, Serpentera loses power. Tommy and Rocky take on the Tick Monster, and the others call upon their Zords while Tommy calls upon Tor. Zed gets enough power in Serpentera to retreat after the Rangers destroy the monster. That is the power transfer, parts one and two, which Ben once again was AKA
Changing of the Guard. I do want to say while Mike is recovering from that, only in the world of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers would a television broadcast about a peace conference for teenagers draw a crowd, a juice bar, four people deep.
He's not wrong, you know.
I mean, Angel Grove must be like the it city of California or wherever it is that, right? Like, everybody's so obsessed with all...
Oh, believe me, I have notes for that for the wedding when we get to that episode. But it's like, yeah, like, what is it with Angel Grove? It's like, yeah, like, not even just a school, but just that area. It's like, it's like so much talent is supposedly just in this one centralized area. It's kind of nuts.
Yep. So not that I have recovered, we have the questions of the episode.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh boy. We begin with the peace conference. So leading up to this episode, it has been alluded to that there will be a peace conference and that students from Angel Grove will be the ones going to Switzerland. As the episode starts, we learned it's going to be Jason, Zach, and Trini going away. How do you feel about them using the storyline for the departure, especially the fact that in episodes before they did allude to, like, maybe it could be Billy, maybe it could be Tommy. Of course, us as adults go, it's going to be those three. But in a way of writing off characters, how did you feel about this?
So first, we'd like to point out that Ben and I
had the exact same
expression. That is to say that this whole thing was kind of stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Like, I've done Model UN. It's like 4 days. If it's a peace conference, okay, it's a week. But the implication here... This is going to be like the world's longest peace conference.
My exact note is, as a reason for leaving the show altogether, it's awful. Not only are Jason, Trini, and Zach teenagers, and therefore what is going to be accomplished from a peace conference held by a bunch of people with no executive power whatsoever, but in the real life, these things last at best 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And also, even if like, let's say there is this peace conference, it's in the future, right? These things are usually the people that are eligible to go find out like months in advance. But here they leave like 2 days later.
Yeah, it's not like it's just a surprise. Like, surprise, you're going to Switzerland. It's like, you would know. You have to book tickets to go, you know, and get your stuff in order. Get a visa. Get your.
I hope you have your passport. Yeah.
Right? It's like... Oh, we got picked. Well, I don't have my passport. Oh, sorry. I mean, they take like 6 months to a year to get mailed to you. So it's like, good luck.
Also, they then go on in the show to say the teens will be traveling around the world with teens from other areas to discuss matters of import. And I'm like, and who exactly is funding this? Can I have some of their money?
Maybe they joined the Peace Corps and they just didn't want to call it the Peace Corps.
I think you took what Brian was going to say.
That's what I was going to recommend. It's like, if they're going to go this hard and they're going to be gone that long, have them join the Peace Corps, because that makes a lot more sense.
Well, you know? Not really, because they're still teenagers, but...
You could make something up. Yeah.
They could be doing, you know, like non-religious missions.
Bear in mind, this arc basically lasted 7 episodes, right? From the introduction of Rocky, Adam, and Aisha in Ninja Encounter to the end of Power Transfer. They had 7 episodes to establish something. Didn't. Mm-mm. That's bad.
I mean, you know, Trini's family could have decided to move away. Maybe, you know, Zach got an invitation to attend some fancy schmancy like music school. And Jason could have been offered a karate scholarship to go to college early. Like, there's like 50,000 billion possibilities that could have still gotten rid of these kids, because clearly we needed to.
The only issue with that, right, is it would have had them leave one by one, which means they wouldn't have been able to reuse group shots of the team.
They could have said that they have to, all, like, coincidentally, everything starts on the same day. Or, like they still could have done something. Like, maybe the three decide to leave early to go on a road trip together and reconnect. Because as we know, over the last, like, 7 episodes, they've all been hanging out together and without Tommy, Kim, and Billy.
Like, they're squadding up their squad. So it's like, you
right?
know.
Well, not only that, but another thing they could have done is they could have, like, take the scholarship, the family moving, the dance school or music school thing. You could have it where, like, one episode Jason unveils he's getting the scholarship and he's going to be leaving around this time frame. Another episode it kind of focuses on Trini with whatever she has, and then and they kind of lands around that same time frame, and then you just have it build all the way up into Power Transfer that goes
again on. I hasten to point out the actors were fired before Ninja Encounter.
But the thing is, though, is that, like, my point is that what you do is that you set it up in a way where you're still able to use the group shots that you have leading into Power
Transfer. But things like Jason discovering he gets a scholarship, or Trini being told she has to move away, or Zach getting something, involves the actors being there to film them hearing it.
Seeing these like half-ass shots, you could have had them in like the background with a bad voiceover, which they did anyway.
Can I also interject on that?
Go for it.
I'm saying is we would have still found fault with it. There is no way they could have done it properly with those three having been fired like months previously.
So if they had done what Mike is suggesting, obviously, it wouldn't have been Austin St. John being the one saying, like, oh, man, I got a scholarship. It would have been, like, Tommy shows up and he's talking to, like, Billy and Kim. It's like, oh, hey, man, did you hear? Jason got a scholarship. It's like, oh, wow, that's really great. Like, it's always going to be, like, the three that are still there being the ones introducing the concept of, oh, yeah, this is happening to them off screen and you're never going to see them again. So...
And you can just kind of, and then you still call him in to do the Ranger missions until you get to Power Transfer, and then
then going off Ben's point, then if let's say you needed to use the group shots, and because it's not like Zordon ever said that no, you're stuck in this job until we defeat Lord Zedd, maybe they felt tired and exhausted, and maybe they were, you know, wanting to spend more time with their families and be able to be normal teenagers. Like, that would have been a cool thing to establish. It would explain why, like, in the baby sequence, we're talking about a Ninja Encounter, right? Like, we very clearly see not Trini, Zach, and Jason walking away, and they would have been within earshot of the others going, oh my god, there's a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I know I have Serpent Terror as number 2, but I'm actually going to hop to number 3. Because I want to keep with the theme of where we are right now. which is Jason, Trini, and Zach. When they have Kim and Billy and Tommy tell the others that they were selected, it was painfully obvious it wasn't them. How bad was it that we couldn't see Trini, Jason, and Zach be given the news and get genuine reactions from the actual actors who played the characters?
I mean, it wasn't going to happen.
For those of you that are listening, I think we all just kind of shrugged.
You could hear the shrugs.
Honestly.
Did it suck? Brett, yeah, but.
Brian, what were you going to say?
I mean, at the very least, at least it's a memorable shot. I mean, I'm not saying it's a good shot, but I mean, like, I still remember that shot, like, you know, where it was just silhouettes and like the California sun on in the background. And I was like, all right. I mean, I can at the very least suspend my disbelief for a second and be like, okay, I guess that's them. But like, yeah, it was painfully obvious that it wasn't them. And yeah, they should have gotten something better, but due to the nature of all of this, it's like, what are you gonna do? We got what we got, because that's just the way.
Honestly, I think it's better than if they had like cut in the different shots of the actors from stock footage.
Yeah.
Because it would have just felt choppy and like they did it unpolished and it messed with the flow.
Yeah. Like,
it wasn't a great shot. Like, it was an okay shot. It wasn't great that we didn't see the real Rangers, but it is what it is.
True, but it's still one of the more visually interesting shots from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
I know, yeah. It reminds me of Top Gun, just a little bit. Just a little bit. Also, I'm glad that we didn't do that, because I think it's in this episode that we get that shot of Trini where we have the stunt actress with her back to the camera looking up at Zordon, and you obviously hear someone do an ADR, and then it cuts to Tui Trang, and the difference in the audio is like
night and day.
Oh my god, it was like, why did you go with that take?
It's like she says something like, no, Zordon, and then it cuts to the front, and then Tui Trang's like, there has to be another way. Mm-hmm. It's like,
no, Zordon, there has to be another way. I'm like, oh god, like, even as a kid I was like, that is weird.
I mean, what was it, a few episodes ago we also actually, no, it's in this episode where we get that awkward voice for Jason's voiceover when he's in the helmet and the suit, and he's like, we're gonna go over there and search, and I'm like, it's so cringy. Yeah.
All right, guys, let's go over there. Huh.
Well, the funnier part is
you go look for the sword.
Well, not only that, but the shot where they find out that they're going to the peace conference, it's distinctly Jason going, that's awesome, but you could clearly tell it's also not Austin St. John saying that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads into another question for Jason, Trini, and Zach, which is the final mission. The final mission for the three is to get the Sword of Light so they can have their powers transferred over to the new three. Knowing in the past that power coins can be handed over, i.e. the Green Ranger in season one, and can be created in general, i.e. the White Ranger a few episodes ago, do you feel that this mission was completely necessary?
We got a lot of dead hair here. Someone stop talking.
Okay, so I will say I think it's pointless. Not because I think later on, I know it's a different power, but when Kimberly leaves, she just hands over the power coin to Kat. Which, like, first of all, that's not even the same power anymore, because you'd switch powers like four times or three times or whatever. But there's so much wasted stock Sentai footage of them trying to pull the sword out of the guy's hand. That was just like, okay, can you just do it? It was really pointless. I think they felt like they needed to do some kind of big thing in a send-off. But this whole Sword of Light, the Sword of Light is one of those Power Ranger tropes where, like, it'll never come up any other time we transfer powers.
Yeah.
Except for this episode. And there's really no logical explanation given for why you need this power sword, because, there's just no logical reason for why you need the sword when Zordon is the one that can give these powers and you can just give them up.
Yeah.
Because remember, when Zordon offers them the chance to no longer be Rangers and live a normal life, it's with the assumption that they're just giving the powers back to Zordon, that he can just take them back. So why can't he take them back and then give them to Adam, Rocky, and Aisha?
Which is something we also see in Turbo.
Yeah.
Right. So go ahead, Brian.
So basically the main question is, what purpose does the sword facilitate there? And it's just a MacGuffin that gets them off planet for a while. That's really it. I mean, and I just read Go-Go Power Rangers issue 31 and 32, where they literally go back to this scene, they retell it in comic book form, and there's the explanation given there is just as flimsy as this one.
On the other hand, and I wonder if this is something Ben is going to mention, that the episode did put Rocky, Adam, and Aisha in a position where the Rangers weren't available to help, and they were the primary people around who could help with the fog machine.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to talk about
that. No?
No.
Okay.
I will talk about that when that actually comes up as a question. But what I am going to say is, when we see Tommy hand Jason his power coin, it is still the original green power coin, right? When we see Kim hand Kat her power coin, it's the ninja power coin, right?
Yep.
And this is the thunder power coin, right? We are talking about the thunder powers here. We're not talking about the ninja powers. We're not talking about the original Mighty Morphing powers. So on a level of MacGuffin, in a lot of backsplanation, you could route the fact that the ninja power, the thunder power specifically, had to be done with this sword. It's complete nonsense. It's complete tosh, but you could do it.
No.
But they didn't,
is what I was going to get to. This whole thing, as Brian said, was an excuse to get them off of Earth. Sheerly because Jonathan Zacher, the director of the episode, who went on to be showrunner for Power Rangers Samurai, and has a lot to answer for, wanted to use the footage from Die Ranger of the Serpentera over there destroying a planet. And he couldn't do it to Earth, right? Like,
yeah.
He wanted to use that footage and he couldn't do it on Earth. It's not like 24 where they casually detonated a nuclear bomb in San Francisco, right? Like, and then didn't mention it again. You can't just casually wipe out a city in 1994 Power Rangers, right?
Especially not on a kid show.
No.
Yeah.
So it was completely just an excuse to get them off planet to use that footage, I'm telling you.
Just as an aside and kind of an incidental, but I think that this is the only time that we actually see like footage of the villains from Die Ranger's base, like, because it was, I think it was that upside down triangle. The
upside down triangle.
Yeah. And that was kind of cool, and I'm glad that they used it. I mean, it was kind of wasted, but it was also like, cool, that's something that we wouldn't have seen with Lord Zedd. So, okay.
See, I don't think it was wasted, right?
Yeah.
If we hadn't had that scene, right, Serpentera wouldn't have been the threat that it was.
Fair.
Right? It would have just been big.
Right? Yeah, because it does establish, like, especially when you have the battle of Jason versus Serpentera when he's in the Red Dragon Zord, like, you see the size differential between the two. And that's one of the things that they wanted to establish, too, is, like, how much more imposing Serpentera can be. But we'll also talk about that a little bit, too, because that's one of the things that we'll talk about in a bit.
We should do that now. It was a perfect segue.
Yeah, exactly. So, quick and to the point, what are your first thoughts when you see Serpentera for the first time? Since we're talking about it. And for the record, the quick and to the point was more on my end of asking the question.
Right.
My answer was silly. Ooh, that's big.
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, I think my reaction was, ooh, it's a dragon now.
I think Serpentera is one of the coolest looking Zords. Unfortunately, in this episode, he's kind of, but just that footage, and correct me, like that was, because Mike, you've seen Dire Ranger. That was Tokyo that Serpentera was destroying in Dire Ranger, I think, right?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, it was Tokyo.
Which they used that shot at least like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, every time they showed Serpentera, that is the shot, time. Yeah.
But like, so I was like, okay, wait, they're still destroying the planet, but is it already destroyed? Like, I lost track at a point, but still, I thought it was like, I thought it looked really, really cool. Kind of wish I had bought the toy back in the day too, but like, c'est la vie. But big, nasty, and awesome looking.
Yeah. Brian, because you mentioned this, sorry, Sasha, give me one sec. You mentioned like the fact that like with the Dire Ranger footage and how like you saw the thing about like the actual Dire Ranger villains being utilized, you know, because it's a Sasha and I episode later on when we do it, Storybook Rangers actually uses one of the generals.
Oh, cool.
So like that's one of the few times that we actually get to see like one of the actual main villains of Dire Ranger move over into
discuss it then.
Yeah. Well, this is the only time we get the Sentai guy in here, but yeah. So Sasha,
what were we talking about? Oh,
Serpentera.
Do we ever get an explanation for where Serpentera came from, other than this is Lord Zedd's Zord?
The implication at the beginning of the episode is he'd been building it.
Okay, follow up question to that: what happened to the Dragon Zord?
It's just chilling under the bottom of the sea.
But we never see it again, right?
Yeah, we do.
Do we?
Yeah. Later in the season.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's right. Because of the...
You also see it sometimes when they form certain Megazords. Parts of the Dragon's Order just on it.
Season 3. Watch out for that.
Yeah.
Well, there goes that theory.
So, with giant Zord comes a massive amount of energy, but apparently constant low batteries.
Mm-hmm. It has the processing speed of dial-up. That's just how this works.
Now, with that in mind, with your first impression, what were your thoughts on Serpentera when you learned that it ran out of energy rather quickly, thus foiling Lord Zedd and his plans?
You want to know, and I'm gonna go first because my reaction to this is that of a 42-year-old man and not a kid, right? Which was, why don't you just take a year off, let a Serpentera charge, and then just win? Take a year's vacation, dude.
Plug it into the wall and see what happens after a year.
And charge it like a Tesla for a while. So that's where Elon Musk got the plans.
it was Lord Zedd all along.
So he couldn't store it on the moon, probably, but like, Serpentera could absolutely benefit from some like solar panels, maybe.
He can't store it on the moon yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, my first reaction is, wow, really cool, badass looking, use my language, like really cool looking Zord, and it has, you know, the operating power of, actually no, like kids' toys batteries last longer than this.
I get more life out of my Switch.
It's using store brand batteries.
Not even. It's like you're using batteries for, it's like using a battery prototype, right? It's like you didn't have a real generator, so you just made something out of spare parts and hope it works.
Like,
and then it doesn't.
Here's the thing, right? Is if they had it showed up here and then realized they had the power problem, went away, and it stayed away for a while and came back. And you're like, oh, well, it's had time to charge its batteries. Now it's going to be a threat. But you see it in like 3 episodes time. Like, it doesn't ever actually go. They just keep bringing it back, and that turns it into a joke.
Yeah, and part of the joke, it's actually a great segue right here, is Tor.
Well, no, I wasn't quite done.
Oh, okay.
But I would say it gets turned into a joke, and then it disappears for like 7 to 10 seasons, and then gets blown up by a motorbike.
Because motorbikes space. Have... But it's still a good segue, though, for the joke part, because Tor, who Zordon introduced Tor like an episode ago or a couple episodes ago, it doesn't matter. It was introduced earlier, but before the mission to the deserted planet, Zordon introduces Tor to the Rangers, and everyone acts impressed like they've never seen Tor before. What are your thoughts on this and the fact that it's Tor that is the main reason that Serpentera's power is actually depleted the most?
I'm sorry, inconsistent writing in Power Rangers? What a novel concept I've never heard of before.
Lack of internal consistency?
Who'd have thunk it? Like, I don't know.
All I mean, at this point, I expect this. Like, really.
All joking aside, this happens all the time in the Mighty Morphin era. All the time in the Mighty Morphin era. Like, powers get introduced, they get forgotten, then they come back and it's like the first time they've ever used it, and then jetting happens and then goes away instantly.
Where the opposite happens, they introduce something really, really cool that has a lot of potential and then we never see it again.
Or they introduce their motorbikes, which they use for one exact episode and never talk about again. Because it's a Sentai and therefore there must be a motorbike. I'm pretty sure there's a motorbike in like every Sentai season. That's not true, but
they haven't been doing it a lot in the last 10 seasons, but
and how many seasons are there of Sentai?
Too many.
40 something.
Next month it's going to be 45.
Yeah. That's a lot of Sentai.
Told you, too many.
And then
too many Sentais.
It's not a big deal. It happens, especially. I mean, I can't blame the writers, right? Because who knows what order they wrote the scripts in, right? Who knows what order they were told the episodes were gonna air, right? Like,
yeah. I have a theory about that too, Ben. Where it could have very well been that somebody was told to write this, and then like somebody else wrote that too, and then like they never got to be able to kind of cross check and go, hey, here's what I wrote. Oh, this is kind of messing with things, let's change that up. So it could have just, it happens sometimes.
Yeah.
So it happened a lot during the Mighty Morphin era.
So then we got two more topics with a total of 3 more questions. We're going to go with Adam, Aisha, and Rocky. So real quick, I know this is not a real question in this thing, but Ben, real quick, for episode 1, or part 1,
yes.
When did Adam, the greatest Power Ranger of all time, appear in part 1?
The first appearance of Adam Park, the greatest of all time, was 11 minutes and 10 seconds after the opening credits.
So unacceptable.
I'm gonna allow it for this one, since it is the last appearance of Jason, Zach, and Dreamy. Okay. They did appearance, quote unquote.
All right, fair enough. Now, what about for part 2? When did Adam appear?
3 seconds after opening credits, much more acceptable.
Do you hear the glee in his voice when he says that? Because I did.
I'm not going to lie, because we record the episodes out of order, which everyone hears us say this every episode now at this point. This is possibly one of the best bits that Ben and I do at this point now.
I almost have to wonder, now that Adam's going to be a permanent member after this, it's like, you know...
I will stop doing it after this season.
Okay.
I'll find another meme for season 3.
Okay. So while the Rangers are away on Jason, Trini, and Zach's final mission, Zordon gives Adam, Aisha, and Rocky a mission of their own and to destroy the sleeping machine that Finster made and was released by Swan and Babu. However, they don't have an easy go at first. How did you feel about their rather easy capture in the beginning and Adam's smarts to get them free to destroy the machine?
Before we talk about this, can I give one cool little note that I have written down?
Go for it.
It was probably completely unintentional, but I really like the fact that the putties chained Aisha up with her hands behind her back this time so she couldn't pick the lock. It was probably completely unintentional, but oh, I was like, huh.
They've learned.
They're learning.
Putties are capable of learning from their past mistakes.
Yeah, they're not that clever. Just coincidental.
I just think that would be a really interesting, you know, like, I don't know. The putty that learns.
The one putty that could.
I think I can. I dig it.
But outside of the whole, we can't fight them very well before we get captured, but after we get captured, we're going to whoop them. Outside of that, I think it was really good. It was definitely the, and I've talked about this before, and I talked about it a little bit in Ninja Encounter, but it was definitely a step up from most normal unmorphed fights that we've had to this point. The three of them definitely seem to have talents or the ability to perform choreographed fights the others either didn't or weren't asked to do. They definitely have a very different fighting style to, say, Austin St. John or Toy Trang.
Yeah.
So it was just a more interesting fight.
And it not only that, but it also showed, you know, in the capture part, it showed Adam's smarts.
As I as I said during the injury count, they were trying to put him over as the clever one of the three.
Yeah. So definitely built him up well there on that one.
Not gonna lie, my first reaction is like, oh god, they got captured again. But then it doesn't last very long, which I appreciated, and it had a purpose this time. But I'm gonna pivot just teensy-weensy bit, just a little bit, because it's still in the same scene. Can we talk about how stupid of a fog machine that is that Finster built, that it can be taken out with a soccer ball?
Yeah.
It was clearly made of glass, so. And if my youth taught me anything, yeah, soccer balls can definitely shatter glass.
Which, like, you'd think Finster would have learned a little something by now about anything, but I guess he's just been sitting there twiddling his thumbs and just, like, drawing in his little creepy sketchbook of, like,
remember,
I'm just waiting for Auntie Rita to return.
The greatest Power Ranger of all time got defeated by a candle.
yeah.
But then after the power transfer took place, the first mission that Adam, Aisha, and Rocky got as Rangers was to take on Silverhorns. It was a very quick mission. Would you prefer that they had gotten more time to showcase themselves as Rangers rather than instantly calling upon their Zords as soon as they morphed? Okay, we have like a nodding of a yes, a nodding of a no, and I can't see Brian, so sorry, Brian. Brian's doing the
shoulder. Well, I was waiting for Brian to actually speak.
Yeah. I have a thought here. I think it would have been cooler if, like, the episode had just ended with them like, oh cool, we're Power Rangers, and then like they saved that for the next episode, maybe.
Kind of like a part three instead of a two-parter?
Not even a part three, just like, okay, cool, we're Power Rangers now, and then like after that, then you get to showcase them in a full episode where it's like, hey, here's an unmorphed fight, here's us morphed, and then here's us in the Zords for the first time. Give them a little room to breathe, maybe, instead of rushing them into a fight.
I get that. At the same time, though, I think they were rushed into the fight because they still had to sort of finish the episode while also being able to sort of send Zach, Trini, and Jason on their way. I think what was really disappointing, though, is when the transfer happens, we see two morphed sets of Rangers. And like, yeah, ones were on one side, ones on the other. But at that point, it would have been cool to see at least one last shot of them unmorphed now that they don't have their powers. Even if it's just like stock footage from like episode one or something of them just awkwardly looking at Zordon.
Yeah.
Ben? Points. Number one, I do not want a third part of this story, mainly because if this season goes on for another episode, I'm going to stab myself with a pen.
Which you're currently holding.
And two, I wasn't disappointed in the fact that they didn't really get to fight as Rangers, because we'd seen them beat up putties unmorphed. So the logical extrapolation of that is, well, when they're Power Rangers, they can do it better, right? Yeah. What I was incredibly disappointed was, in their first time out as Power Rangers, they didn't get a morphing sequence. They just got morphed back to action.
That's fair.
That's what I was upset about. That's I did not fair. Like that at all. Good. We should have heard them morphing for the first time.
They should have done the roll call. I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So, which brings us to the last question. We bring it back to Jason, Zach, and Trini, but more about Austin St. John, Tui Trang, and Walter Jones. So we know the story as to why Austin, Walter, and Tui left the show. But would it have been better for the show if they had been given a proper farewell that they deserved, being how they were essentially fan favorites from the beginning? And we've seen in the past, like, Kim gets a really good farewell where they like show like a clips thing of her. Billy gets it in Zio. I can't remember off the top of my head about the guys in Turbo, if they got something or not.
They did.
But
we'll get to that. Just ask the question.
But do you feel that Austin, Walter, and Tui should have gotten like an actual kind of like farewell, like the way Kim did in season 3 and Billy did in Zio?
All right, counterpoint. First, just in case there's someone listening to this who has skipped straight to this episode and hasn't heard us talk about it, why were Jason, Walter, and Tui, Austin, Walter, and Tui fired?
Because of they wanted to unionize and stuff and money.
Money. It was money. So I have a counter question for you. What kind of send-off would you want of them to have?
I would have liked them to have, like, instead of just, like the thing with the airport and stuff like that, like, you could have done that, but then you could have done, like, a little clip show thing, like we saw with, like, just, like, some of the best moments of the three. Because, again, like...
Right. So a 7-episode departure arc wasn't enough.
We didn't really see much of them, let's be honest here.
Because they've been fired, Mike!
I think,
given... They didn't leave the show on good terms!
Neither did David Yost when he came to Zio. And they still gave him one.
Well, they kind of had to, because he'd been on there the show from the beginning. But with Billy's departure at the end of the episode, it's not even Billy, it's a completely different actor.
Well, different actor ADR-wise.
They didn't even use...
No, it's a different actor!
Stock audio of him. It's not even him in the image. Just someone who vaguely looks like him.
Yep.
To go through it, right? They had a 7-episode departure arc. When Kim leaves next season, she gets 3 episodes. When Billy disappears, he returns to his home planet in a single episode. Kendricks in Lost Galaxy dies in 1 episode. 4 Turbo Rangers. 4, which includes both Tommy Oliver and Adam Park, arguably the 2 greatest Rangers of all time, are gone in 2 episodes. Other Ranger, at most, has 3 episodes, because it's, at most, a 3-episode season finale arc.
You know, I will say at least these characters get a send-off. Unlike Aisha,
who's like, hey, I'm staying in the past.
Exactly. I'm just staying in Africa in the past and taking care of animals. And it's not even like Aisha's actress. It's just a kid playing her. And it was just really, but here's the thing. I don't think, like I said, the only thing I would have preferred was like a legit goodbye of like us seeing them unmorph for the last time or something small like that, just to remind us who these, what these characters look like.
Yeah.
This was, in my opinion, sorry, Brian, I know you've got something to say, the perfect send-off. Outside of maybe seeing them unmorphed one last time, right? Because it sent the message that no one person was more important than the fight against evil, right? It basically went, look, we understand these three are gone, but Serpentera is still out there. Zed's still out there. We got to get on with business. But more importantly, it showed that it was one long narrative, right? If they'd done anything too spectacular here, running, then when Kim's departure came up, they would have had to done another particularly spectacular thing. Then when Billy left, they would have had to have done some. You see what I'm saying? Like the reason that Mighty Morphing through in space works is because it's treated as one narrative for the most part, right? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way they handled the departure of Jason, Zach, and Trini was with way more respect than they actually needed to. Like, they didn't need to give these people a 7-episode send-off arc, right? They could have just been, like, done in 2 episodes.
Yep.
I think part of the reason that I think you bring up this question, Mike, is because over the course of these last episodes, we didn't really see Jason, Trini, and Zach. Really, we see stock footage samples every now and then, and the voices aren't there. And so it feels like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it feels like you didn't get a chance to say goodbye to the characters. Whereas like with Kim, they set it up. We saw her like struggling with leaving and, you know, having the choice of, am I going to go? I think we would have felt differently if, like, let's say the actors decided to leave on their terms, right? Then they would have been like, okay, then they could have written an arc that is like, you know, the Rangers finding out about the peace conference, deciding to apply for whatever reasons they want to apply to a peace conference or whatever that is. Then they would have been able to have an arc that felt more solid and kind of spanning through, that would have made us feel something. Whereas like personally for me at this power transfer, I felt nothing. Like, there, to me, I think part of it is like there's no emotion because we haven't seen these Rangers really in forever. So, like, I'm already unattached to them.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest impact of the entire episode is seeing Serpentera for the first time.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brian. I'm going to put some thoughts together.
All right. What I and feeding off of what Sasha said, which I completely agree with, is I think when you go back and you watch these, I mean, it just kind of, it's hard to kind of like take away the real life behind the scenes stuff. It's kind of fused with the story at this point, because it's mm-hmm. like you can just kind of tell, it's like, oh, obviously there's things that were going on behind the scenes. And I guess it makes you almost feel like, you know, yes, Power Rangers is a business, but it almost feels like you almost wish that Saban had just been like, all right, you guys were obviously having contract disputes. If you want to leave, you can leave. But like, you almost wish that like he had maybe been a little more considerate and been like, all right, let's put you in these last couple episodes and go. And then, like, I'm finding other actors and you're going. Like, almost like putting a 2-week, you know, notice and you're gone. So it feels almost like Saban just, you know, you hear that story, it's almost like Saban just cares about money, which is not entirely true, but it's just,
if there's anything that's come out of transparency, we're recording these right as Dino Fury is airing.
Right.
And there was an article that came out right before Dino Fury started airing, talking about Saban has a very particular way he wants things done. There must be this. And I know that this problem, right? There must be a comedy duo, which explains Ben and Betty in Beast Morphers. Literally the worst thing about that show. There must be two unmorphed fights and a morphed fight and a Zord fight in every show. And this reeks of that. It's like my way or the highway, right? And as someone who witnessed businesses in the early 90s, that was very much a way of thinking back then.
Yeah, and the interview that you're talking about is the Simon Bennett interview, because he's the showrunner for Dino Fury. And one of the things, because I read the exact same interview that you're talking about, and one of the things that he said is that with Hasbro, they're kind of loosening those reins. Like, Saban is still like an executive producer of the show, but they kind of like loosen those reins because he doesn't have as much
creative control anymore.
So they're able to, because another rule that Saban had was particularly after Mighty Morphin was over, is that he wanted to get rid of the multi-part arcs, the multi-episode arcs. He wanted it to be just one episode done. And something that apparently with Dino Fury is you're going to get a lot more story.
Hello, arc. I'd like to introduce you to Jungle Fury.
Yeah. Well, that was Disney. That's Saban. Yeah. So like with Dino Fury, you're going to be getting, like, you know, from my understanding, more story arcing, like a Jungle Fury, like a Dino Thunder.
There comes a time where the person that created the show is no longer the smartest person when it comes to adapting the show. Case in point, Rob Thomas and Veronica Mars, okay? I'm just going to say right there, like, not talk about not knowing, but that's a separate issue. With Power Rangers, I think Saban forgot what the biggest and best seasons of Power Rangers were. What I think Saban was trying to do was sort of recreate this kind of basic formula of the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which doesn't work anymore.
It's been that way. I don't want to say it's been that way, but it was that way from like Samurai through
100% Beast Morphers, 100%. But like, if you look at seasons like Time Force, like Lightspeed Rescue, like In Space, a lot of those seasons worked because they didn't have that kind of those tropes in it. Like in like Power Rangers in Space had Bulk and Skull and Professor Calamitous, but they weren't necessarily in every episode, and sometimes the things that they were doing were actually really interesting to the point where it wasn't just slapstick. Like, you can't try the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Kids are not stupid. They're going to get sick of it.
Not to mention, it isn't 1994 anymore.
Yeah, right?
Right? What worked in 1994 won't work now.
Nope.
And I made the joke about Jonathan Zacher earlier, right? But Shinkenger, the samurai, which Samurai is based on, the Sentai Samurai is based on, I need to put away the brandy, has a lot of potential to it, right? If they'd been willing to put in the effort to adapt it correctly. And it just... And that was part of the problem, is it's like they took down the book of how to make Power Rangers from 1994, which makes sense now that we realize that Jonathan Zacher was a director on a lot of these episodes in 93 and 94. And just being like, well, this is how we're going to make the show. We can't be bothered to learn what kids nowadays want, right? It's... But back to the actual thing we were discussing.
Well, no, I mean, it's a good conversation, you know?
Yeah. Did Zach, Trini, and Jason deserve better? Yes. Did Austin, John, St. John, Walter Jones, and Tui Trang deserve better? Maybe. Did they do the best they could with what hand they were dealt? Like 90%. Right? I mean, if we were to fantasy book the whole thing, I could fantasy book the hell out of these three leaving, right? I mean,
and for anyone who's listened to the past Austin Mady episodes knows Ben can fantasy book himself out of a paper bag and back into it.
I mean, look at the way we suddenly turned Skull into the White Ranger a couple of episodes ago. But the point being, if I was given access to the actors and a budget and Sentai footage and told, like, I could do it better. But I don't have the actors, right? So I have to play the cards that I'm dealt. And the same with the people who made these episodes. So did they deserve better? Maybe. Was what they got good? Yes. For what it could have been. Right? And it is way better than most Rangers get. I mean, at the end of Wild Force, Princess replaced me with a chair, makes them turn in their jackets.
Yeah, that made no sense. Like, I can understand returning the morphers and all of whatever, but like, why the jackets?
Because no mementos allowed.
That was just so mean.
That's lame.
Like, at least at the end of Lightspeed Rescue, they could... there's a moment at the end of Lightspeed Rescue... Sorry, Brian. Small spoiler. I know you're watching it right now. But, like, at the end of the episode, they've handed their morphers back because they've won. And then they hear an emergency in the thing round, and they run off to help people. And Captain Mitchell's literally trying to give them their morphers back. And they're like, no, we got it. Right? Like...
It's just a fire. We got this.
It's like, It's just a 3-alarm fire. We're good.
But the point is...
Yeah. No, that's a good point. So is that it for your questions?
Yeah, that's it for the questions.
Other notes.
Other notes. We'll start with Ben. Because he's already primed up and ready to go.
The first thing I want to talk about is Bulk and Skull. We have gone from, even at the beginning of this season, a Bulk and Skull who were totally self-focused. They were focused on making themselves famous. They were focused on busting open the myth of the Power Rangers, right? To the very first opening scene of this episode, where we see four people deep all around a TV, and Bulk and Skull are genuinely disappointed when they don't get chosen to be peace ambassadors. They're genuinely gutted. And the fact that the people we saw, even I would go so far as to say a couple of episodes beforehand, even before the baby chase with Ninja Transfer, right? Ninja Encounter. Even before that, right? They would have still been a little bit self-serving, right? But they're genuinely disappointed here. The people we saw before Ninja Encounter wouldn't even implied to go to the to a peace conference, right?
Because it's for nerds.
Because it's for nerds. And then later in the episode, when Rocky, Aisha, and Adam are first at Angel Grove High, Bog just wants to help Aisha with her locker. And a season ago, he'd be trying to stuff her into the locker.
I actually also have a note about Bulk and Skull helping Trini or Aisha with her locker. And I found it kind of weird that like he was genuinely helping. And yeah. Adam and Rocky are just kind of like, you're talking to our friend. But give him credit. They are evolving.
Yeah.
We've had two really heartbreaking moments for Bolt and Skull, maybe even three really heartbreaking moments for Bolt and Skull in fairly quick succession, right? We had the episode where they had the cast of the Ranger's feet.
Yeah, the right? footprints, yeah.
And they drop it. And I've talked about this when you and I reviewed the episode. The yell Bulk gives out is heartbreaking. And the Rangers just laugh at him. And then yeah, the moment in Ninja Encounter where they don't get any credit for trying to help save the baby. And they're just sat there. And then there's this moment where they're crestfallen they didn't get chosen. It just broke my heart, man.
But they do amazing. But they do get it. But they do get chosen to go to Australia later in the season. But that's also plot convenience for other reasons.
Well, better than nothing.
So,
has anyone else got a note? I've got a few. But
let's see here,
Brian, you got anything, buddy?
Yeah. So one of the things, because the way I write my notes is I typically watch the episode and like I just react to, you know, all the scenes in general. So like typically I've got a bunch of notes that kind of inform just how I interact with you guys when we have these questions. But it's also almost like I'm, you know, not necessarily reading off kind of like you read off at the top of the episode, mm-hmm. but it's almost like I'm still following them in sequential order. So one of the notes I did have kind of just about when all the Rangers were in the beginning of the episode, we're talking to Zordon, and he says that a power transfer must occur to three new Rangers. I thought it was kind of dumb that Kim asks, who?
Billy asks the same thing after they get the sword. Yeah. I was like, come on.
It's like, my note literally here is like, Kim asks who. I'm like, oh, come on. You can't be this dense, Kim. What other three people do you know?
I literally have to know. Kim asks Zordon who when he asks about new Rangers. Like, Rocky, Adam, and Aisha don't exist.
Right.
No. We know deep down inside it's really Richie, Curtis, and one other person that we haven't been introduced. Oh, no. It's girl, Skull. Lauren.
No, it's Lauren. Actually, Jinx. No, it's Lauren.
it's that girl Lauren that
used the Billy's love interest. Actually, speaking of an earlier moment when so Zordon tells the group that like, okay, we need a power transfer. They have to go to a desolate planet, right, far away allegedly, to get the sword. Okay. Shouldn't Zordon have maybe gotten the sword earlier and had it on hand just in case?
Oh, but what's the point of that? What's the point of that when you need the adventure, you know?
I mean, it's much like Tommy still wearing green in this episode.
Yeah.
Stock footage.
Also, like, could they have possibly used another city other than LA for, like, the backdrop?
You say that, but, like, the set they used where the Rangers arrive on the deserted planet and are walking through looked really cool.
It did. Honestly, just kind of off the top of my head here, when I was watching this, by the way, because it's in that sepia tone, mm-hmm. and because it's in that kind of like blown out, almost like it's, you know, like the set of like Demolition Man or something, I for a second was like, oh wait, Kamen Rider showing up in this episode, right? Completely forgetting, no, that's a third season episode.
Yeah,
Mask Rider. I was kind of waiting for him to show up, and I was like, wait, oh, right, never mind. But it looked very, very similar to that.
Also, why did Zed and Goldar go after the Rangers of the Serpentera on the deserted planet? I understand the behind the scenes at Sentai footage and everything, but like, from my evil perspective, if I see that the Rangers have left the Earth, my first thought is, let me blow something up, let me do the thing and like take over the Earth. So by the time they come, or like, if like Zed finds out about the sword, right? He had so much time where he could have stolen it any time beforehand as well. Like Zordon and Zed are like parallel like competence here.
Yeah.
For some reason, I have a note here that says there's a moment where Goldar is walking towards Lord Zed in silhouette, and his hip armor makes him look like he got a lot of funk in that trunk.
Boy,
that is a informative and important note, and thank you for sharing that with the
audience. You're welcome. You're welcome.
I have a note here that says at a later point, Zordon hands the Rangers a map and a ring and tells them to find the Sword of Light on the deserted planet. But you may ask, where's this deserted planet? Right, Billy? It's light years away, but don't worry. Alpha is going to transport them. That's right. Zordon has developed faster than light speed travel. Tell us your secrets then, please.
I'm not going to say I have it. That's not how science works for that.
So it is space. I know there's reasons because the command center gets blown up and everything gets destroyed and they lose their powers. But like, you'd think Zordon would have had a backup so that the Power Ranger, the Turbo Rangers could somehow get to space if need be. Because Zordon seemed to have a very convenient backups for his backups until he did.
There is a theory.
Uh-oh.
That the shuttle is a Zordon backup.
Oh, that's right. That he had to deal with Nasada because... or something.
When the small child goes to Nasada and is like, Zordon, the dude's like, right, I'm in. And right. You're like, no one else knows who Zordon is. And then the fact that the space shuttle can interact with the megaship.
Right. Forgot like about that.
There is a fan theory that it backsplains. Or it was Gosei just handing out upgrades for the future.
Nope.
Reasonable explanation for all this.
Question for everybody.
Uh-oh.
We are on a planet in a faraway galaxy. How does Jason summon the Red Dragon Thunder Sword?
It too travels faster than light speed.
But
by the power Dragon of Thunder plot Sword, convenience.
But the Red Dragon Thunder Zord is made from the T-Rex Zord, which hides on Earth.
So, by the power of plot convenience.
I think because before they were sent to the planet, Zordon reintroduced Tor. I wouldn't be surprised if they had actually had the Red Dragon Zord in Tor, because Tor technically went with them to the deserted planet.
Sure.
I mean,
it's the only thing that makes sense. I mean, come on.
Barely, but yes.
It's a bit of a stretch, but I can connect those two ends. So
it's not like we have any clever alternative theories that suggest otherwise.
Yeah. Can I also just say, Tor is just adorable.
Especially when he's knocked on his back.
Like the first time I saw Tor in like the first episode, not this one. My first, like, just watching. I mean, I was watching it at, like, 2 in the morning, and it took every fiber of my being not to go, puppy! Like, he was just so cute. I was like, aw. I don't remember him being that
cute. And when you realize in the Sentai, it's a dude.
Wait, what?
The Sentai,
Tor
is a human that turns into a Zord.
Mm. Yeah.
Boy.
Because he loves turtles.
I have not watched Dire Ranger, by the way. So, but.
Neither have I, so don't worry about it.
Well, in Dire Ranger, Serpentera is actually a god. It's not a Zord, it's a god.
That makes sense.
Does explain the ominous sort of like.
That is designed to keep the balance between good and evil.
Yep.
Also, I have a note here about the awkward editing with the stock footage, but. The last note that I have here, and I actually don't really remember writing this, but it says, why BS, whiny BS pseudo advice equals Zordon.
Oh, I'm still only on part one. I've still got notes for part two.
Oh gosh.
Question.
Answer.
I'm sending you to a faraway place.
Uh-huh.
To retrieve a thing that is incredibly important.
Sure.
And I hand you a map and a MacGuffin.
Mm-hmm.
And say, go. What is wrong with this picture?
I have no idea what I'm walking into. Can I breathe on this planet? Is there gravity on this planet?
Or why don't you just tell me what the MacGuffin is for and how I'm supposed to use it?
That too.
We could have saved like 30 minutes if Zordon had told him to just put the ring on the statue's finger. Yeah. Or if Billy, the Brainiac, had figured it out.
And I'm just curious, what if there was one specific finger that they had to put it on instead of, because I figured that it was just like, oh, just put it on one of the fingers of the statue.
Especially when you see the statue from above, there's a finger sticking out on the other hand.
Right. Oh, right. Well,
my
bad.
Like, but that's my point, right? What if they try to put it on the wrong finger?
Yeah. Let's be honest. We all know Zordon is not the greatest mentor. Clearly, he's not the worst, but he's not the greatest either.
Yep.
Zordon's just floating around in Svetka vodka.
When Zordon is transferring the powers, right, he describes Rocky, Adam, and Aisha with two words each,
mm-hmm.
right? So Rocky, he calls, it is his strength and knowledge that qualifies him to be the Red Ranger. For Aisha, she is spirited and clever. And for Adam, he is watchful and intelligent. Do you agree with these assessments? And if not, how would you assess them?
Brave, loyal, and true.
I would definitely agree with Adam's. Because he definitely is watchful and intelligent. I mean, he showed his intelligence when he created the plan to get out of the chains when they had to destroy the sleep machine. And that also utilized his watchfulness because he saw the soccer ball, he saw the way, you know, and he used his sight to create.
No offense to Rocky, intelligent isn't the first word I'd use.
Well, Adam was intelligent.
No.
Well,
Rocky was, sorry, knowledge.
Oh, knowledge. Yeah, Rocky, I wouldn't.
Each one of them has a word for intelligent. It's knowledgeable, clever, and intelligent. Each one of them.
Here's the thing. We saw little bits of, like, Aisha in that episode when they're introduced. She picks the lock. She's like she doesn't give up, right? We got hints of her personality. In this episode, we really see Adam use his own brains to sort of figure out the best solution. What the heck have we seen from Rocky?
He hid behind a tree.
That only after
Adam. Yeah, but that was after Adam told him to do that.
So as I said, it wouldn't have been the first word I used, nor the second, third, fourth, or fifth.
Yeah.
So for Rocky, I would have said strong and resilient, right?
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
For Aisha, I would have used spirited and dexterous, right? Because she's very nimble, is the wee lass.
Because she's the girl.
No. Because she's a ninja, remember?
I like my version better. It's funnier.
It's true. It is much more casual 90s sexism. But yeah, I felt the fact that he kind of used... It's like...
It's like, yes, I have to come up with pseudonyms for intelligent for all three.
Yeah, just either... When I heard that, I was like, hang on a minute.
Yep.
There's a quote from The West Wing.
Ben is looking up right now as we speak.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the exact wording right because CJ and Sam are arguing, and she says, like, you're jumped up, self-righteous, and something, and he's like, you just used three words that all mean the same thing, and I just kept expecting Sam Seaborn to pop up in Power Rangers. Be like, Zordon,
let me write you a proper speech. That would have been funnier.
Can you imagine a Power Rangers episode written by Aaron Sorkin?
Yes.
Please no.
I don't want to, but I can imagine it.
The Rangers are wrapped up in litigation.
The Rangers get sued for when their Zords destroyed the city. I mean, the amount of times a building gets destroyed or you know, it can't all be the abandoned warehouse district.
Congress introduces a bill to ban the Power Rangers from...
They already tried that in Captain America Civil War. It had about as good a result as you can, and by that I mean not at all.
Angel Grove Accords.
Boy.
Like the Sokovia Accords? Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh.
Then they can all go live in a village together. With Rita as the protagonist.
I mean, if it's after in space, sure, why not?
They can all hide out in, what is it, the Jungle Fury? No, the...
Jungle Pizza. That's a...
No. Yeah. No. That's RJ space.
I didn't say they'd hang out there. They should go get pizza.
Sorry, I meant to say Wild Forest, the island in the sky.
Oh, the Animarium?
Yeah,
can hang out there.
Yeah. The only two people that are allowed in Jungle Karma Pizza outside of the Jungle Fury Rangers are RJ and in my brain canon, Haley, because I think they'd be friends.
Agreed.
I think RJ and Haley would be friends.
Well, with that in mind, any other notes on this episode?
The only last note I have is the Battle Sled tour finisher of just dropping on someone like the Monty Python foot will never not be great.
I love that.
It's just... I just hear the...
No, it's far too silly.
That's not a way you use...
Not for something completely serious.
Right! Yeah. Power Rangers, the totally serious show. Sorry, Brian.
Sorry, I do have one thing that I did want to try and bring up naturally in conversation, but I never know how to do it.
That's what this section's for.
Rocky, Aisha, and Adam are now at Angel Grove High School, and they transferred from Stone Canyon because...
Reasons,
and they have a metal line where they're all, somehow I thought transferring schools would be a big deal, and to which I said, yes, Aisha, that is kind of a big deal. Did your parents all change jobs at the same time? Did you do this of your own free will? Like,
how far away is Stone Canyon?
Like, do you have friends at Stone Canyon High? Like, what facilitated this?
As someone who actually transferred schools in his life, it's hard.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about, like, the stuff that you go through outside of academia. Like, even just transferring is tough. At least it was back home.
It depends on each. So it depends on each state. It depends on their requirements. It depends on what's like, if it's just two generic high schools, it's tricky, but it's not difficult to transfer. Unless one is a fancy, like unless one is like a public versus private or charter, or if one is like a specialty school. Because these are two generic high schools next to each other in California, I think it just would have been a mountain of paperwork, but I can't imagine it would have been two. But the, you're right,
the teenagers wouldn't have seen.
Right. But I think, Ben, you bring up a valid point, and you do as well, Brian, that like, what are their parents? Like, are like, why transfer to Angel Grove other than, you know, plot convenience of having all the Rangers go to the same high school, because that's important for so they can all do environmental PSAs together.
It's reasons.
Exactly.
Because how else are they going to race dirt bikes for charity?
In Australia. Oh, no, sorry. Australia was parachuting, right?
Well, no. So dirt biking was California. Parachuting was the movie. And that was Australia.
It's all the same thing.
Tomato.
Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely something that's on my bucket list, is parachuting with a snowboard.
It's called skyboarding. Thank you very much. Okay, and it was very popular in the 90s.
Yeah, with who?
With a very, very niche subset of extreme sports fans.
There it is.
It absolutely reeks of like being something that like Gen X would love.
Yeah, it was absolutely the sort of thing that kickstarted the X Games. It's back when like skateboarding got big, and rallycross got big, and right around the time snowboarding started being a thing instead of skiing.
I remember when skateboards only had like one kickboard instead of the two on each side. But yeah.
Alrighty. So.
As we show our age on that one, and Sasha's just like, yeah, okay.
Get like, off, you know, my, talk about your, it. And other people's lawns, okay?
Okay, Grandpa, but what I was going to say was that, you know, maybe talk about this off air. You know, fun conversation, sounds great, but Power Rangers?
It was somewhat linked to Power Rangers.
For the first part, sure.
I mean, for God's sake, like Power Rangers, like with Mighty Morphin, they're the ones that like introduced, like, I think, what was it? They even had like shuffleboarding or curling or something at some point. Like they did every sport imaginable under the sun.
Oh, wait,
except
wait.
For hockey. They never have done hockey.
Mike, wait, what was that broom hockey thing they did?
Yeah, that was broom ball.
I mean, they even go snowboarding in the next season when Tommy gets dumped by Letter. In Zio, they go snowboarding.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So with that, let's do the wrap up. We'll start with you, Sasha. Where can they find you on the social medias?
Oh, you did this today. You can find me on Geeky Kaplan on Twitter. That is Kaplan with a K, like Billy Kaplan, the greatest superhero of all time. And of course, geekgirl101.tumblr.com. That is the best way to find me. And yeah, that's it.
Ben, we're going to do our bit together here. As Ben's just...
Sorry, I was ignoring you.
Okay.
Hey, yeah, it's me, your boy, Ben Taylor. Shortstop for the Hartford Yard Goats. You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find this show on Twitter at
VFTG_PR.
You can find my writing, musing, column thingy madoodles. Where I document my journeys through various seasons of Power Rangers over at
txhthockey.com/bens-journey.
I am currently, as of the time of recording, working on the Dino Thunder column, which means I am putting far too much thought into Tommy Oliver and Kat's relationship and why he should have ended up with a high school principal. And you can find me doing the video game thing over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
That's me.
All right, Brian, where can the people find you?
Well, when I'm not on loan, hanging out here with Voices from the Grid, then you can catch me over at castwavestudios.com. Be sure to check out our shows, One Drunk Geek and Boldly Going Nowhere. And you can also find me on Twitter at One Drunk Geek.
All righty. Ray Beer. And then you can obviously find the show on txhthockey.com/VFTG, Musings from the Grid, MFTG, for our musings as well. And then, of course, for me, you can find me on Twitter at TheLindenbaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions, Twitch doing the gaming thing at Twitch.tv/MichaelX75, and obviously everything is on TXHTHockey.com. So with that, Ben, take us out.
It is with great sadness that we say goodbye to Jason, Zach, and Trini. But it is with a great sadness we say goodbye to you, dear listener. But much like Jason, Zach, and Trini, or at least Jason, we will see them again next time. But we will round out with the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. Be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender specific honorifics.
And until next time, be sure to grab your power morphers and your power coins.
And until our next more phenomenal episode, may the power protect you.
Does Serpentera run on dial-up?